Welcome to the Future of Healthcare, Live with Intent podcast with Justin Tomlinson and Thomas Reichart, authors of Live with Intent and architects of the LWI Learning Pathway. This is part two of our special episode, A Patient Perspective, with Christine von Raesfeld, founder and CEO of People with Empathy, and guest co-host Christoph von Frechum, founder and CEO of Data for Patients. We're also welcoming Carolina Consuegra, expert in healthcare communications and co-founder of Science to People. Christine, Christoph, and Carolina are actively shaping the future of healthcare. Their impact is far-reaching. They are giving patients tools and hope, and helping companies tap into the power of data and efficiency of true patient centricity.
So welcome back, Christoph, as my co-host while Thomas is still on holiday.
Lucky him. But I'm happy to be here, Justin.
And I think we had one additional person that's going to join us today.
That's true. Maybe, Christine, you can introduce Carolina.
Sure. So I am, you know, when I started this journey and really I was focused on my own journey and really focused on the things that were happening to me. And with the opportunity to meet Christoph and Carolina, I've expanded my views and really just taken this global focus of, you know, I have so many advantages in the place and the time that I'm in. And so many people don't have that. And Carolina has opened my eyes to these conversations, these problems, and really, you know, I'm just glad to have her here because my story, even though it's helping me, it has the potential to help so many others, and really bringing in other countries is what we need to do. So Carolina, hey, welcome. Hey.
Thank you. My name is Carolina. And as Christine said, I am from Colombia. So I'm giving the Latin American perspective here. And I am just very grateful to be here and share this amazing space with all of you guys. So, and Christine, I'm just flattered. Thank you.
Carolina, what is it you liked about part one? What caused you to say, oh yeah, I'd be part of part two?
The whole conversation for me is absolutely fascinating. And it's the conversation I've been having with Christine and Christoph all year long. And it was really nice to see sort of a synthesis of the various points we consider so relevant, everything around data, clinical trials, and just getting the real patient voice out there is super important. I've worked all my life in pharma from marketing, but I'm also a patient. Almost like 8-9 years ago, I had a seizure. And from then on, I had a brain surgery, but I am considered an epileptic patient. I have to take my pills every day in order not to have a seizure. So I am a patient in the shades of gray. I'm in a very light gray zone. I'm super okay, but I am a patient. And that gives me the perspective and the right to be here as well. So all these conversations going on, it's also super interesting to see how at the end of the day, Christine, Christoph, and myself are not so different. You know, the essence of what a patient needs remains the same despite the location or, for example, Christine that has this access to amazing people. Or my friend here in LATAM that really doesn't know how to start. The essence of what patients need remains the same.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I knew after we recorded part one that it was going to be impactful for our listeners, and I was right. And we've had a lot of people tuning in and listening to your story, Christine. And we thought we'd come back with this part two to go a little bit deeper into the conversation. And Christoph, maybe you can start off by bridging from part one to what we'll do here in part two.
Yeah, sounds great. When we let data do the talking, it seems like in healthcare, everything becomes easier for everyone involved, the professionals as well as patients. So what I think would be great today is that we dive a little deeper into how data can help, maybe share some tips and tricks, things that we've seen, we've learned, focusing on this and take it from there, Justin.
Thanks for joining all of you. Christine, one of the impacts of the last discussion we had was learning more about this pharmacogenomics test that I didn't know anything about. And one of my family members listened to part one and has already ordered and is taking that test as we speak and hoping that when she gets her results back, it will shed some light on new possibilities for her to manage the medications that she takes. So thanks for that wonderful insight. And with that, I thought we could jump in a little bit today with Where do you see healthcare going, and what questions should we be asking?
Such a difficult question there with so many answers that we could go with. But really, to me, what I think the key in all of this is really, truly patient empowerment. You know, knowing your options, knowing what's out there. I think I mentioned it before. I was never a student. I was not into science or any of these things until later in life, I realized that these are the things that could influence me, that could change my care, that could impact my quality of life. And that's when I started to take an interest in these things. And to hear that you have somebody actually getting this test, it just really warms my heart. You know, I've experienced so many different forms of damage and side effects that we didn't need to have. And now that I have had that pharmacogenomics, and what I'm hoping for your friends and family is really that ability to tailor my own care and to make sure that as a patient, I'm taking that responsibility of my own care to another level and educating myself and really knowing what's out there. So I think really for me, the future of medicine is all dependent on how empowered people are as a patient. And I'll leave it there, Krista.
Yeah, I think I couldn't agree more, Christine. Data should really empower patients to get connected to exactly the right care for them. That's where the future should be going. I mean, Justin, the fact that you were able to connect this person in your life with this test because you heard it from someone else is a great illustration, right? I think in healthcare, it sometimes feels like you're living in a world of fantastic capabilities, yet the only ones you get in touch with are the ones that are happening in the next town or somebody tells you about it, right? That's kind of how it feels like. You feel like you're missing out on so many things, right? And that goes right into a big issue in healthcare. It's really impossible to know all that is out there. And it's a really old problem. Patient associations, frankly, for patient groups are the ones that sort of bring the relevant information together. There's a big issue in that. Most countries don't want businesses to be advertising their products directly to patients, right? Because it's believed that care decisions should be made by medical criteria, not business criteria, right? So it's a really old topic. But I mean, I personally think that the technology that exists in other parts in our lives, like, I mean, recommendation algorithms is the technical terms, but you know, the way you get recommended music that you like, the way you get recommended books that you like, the way you get recommended all these things already in your life that you like, that is based on your profile, your data profile as a consumer of those products. And an algorithm is looking for other products that you're likely to like. Imagine that technology, but on steroids in healthcare, finding care for you that helps patients like you improve faster and better than you currently are. You know, that same technology applied in healthcare could make this a lot easier. The same question on whether the person owning that algorithm, you know, is going to want to sell you stuff or not is going to still be there. So that's going to continue being a difficult conversation. And I feel that patient associations are going to continue playing a critical role in providing unbiased information to patients. But your data should be making this a lot more easy in the future.
So it's really clear for me that data is a big part of the future, maybe even a driver of the future. And I've been wrestling with in my own mind, not really being a patient yet, what should I be doing with data? Should I be actively collecting data now? Should I be sharing data? Is sharing data something that's going to come back and bite me in the end because I give away information that somehow harms me or triggers endless marketeers coming after me? How does that work?
So Justin, I have to say, none of us really know how it's going to play out. Right. But the data is important. And I think as a patient, one of the things that I've realized is that it is the collective data that is going to change things for us. Right. I always tell people it's only through collective intelligence and collaborative leaderships that will come up with viable solutions for us all. So in that instance of sharing and what do you do, right? There's a lot of things that need to be explored and gone into. But I think one of the things we really need to do is educate ourselves around data and what it is. Data is not something tangible that most people can touch. They don't understand it. And so it's really hard, you know, to describe that to someone. And Carolina, I want to bring you in here really quick because Carolina had this amazing thought of data, you know, as we try to explain it to people, I think of data as my song, you know, and Carolina puts data into a new category as being the new soil. And so Carolina, I'd love for you to touch on that as we kind of try to put this into clearer terms.
Yeah. So, I think all of us have heard the term that data is like this new oil, you know, and there's so much talk about data, but is it really, is it the new oil? I mean, data alone, if it stands alone, it's insignificant. And we live in a connected world with overload of information. We're burned out and overwhelmed with the data. And there's this bits and pieces of loads of it everywhere. And the thing is that if we don't really integrate it and really make it part of an ecosystem, our data won't bloom into the solutions we desperately search for. Data shouldn't be seen as the new oil. It should be considered as the new soil because we want to help patients grow their garden, teach them how to use the data in a safe, empowering way, and they can reap the benefits from it. That's why the three of us, with Christophe and Christine, we've talked about how we should encourage patients to think of their data as the new soil, that we want to create this collective intelligence, nurture it, create innovative digital ways to engage with them, focusing on helping them to use their data to improve the care they're getting. Doing so will give us the insights on the priorities in which providers should work for, but also always being respectful and keeping it safe.
I love that analogy of data being the new oil because from a
business, new soil.
Well, from a business perspective, it is seen as the business driver, the money maker, the wealth creator, the oil, if you will, from a business standpoint. And so I get your twist on that to say it's actually not the oil, it's the soil. And without really nurturing it and growing meaningful insights out of it, it's actually not worth anything. And there's data everywhere that's actually not worth anything. And I sit here and think about myself in the last 5 years, as I am getting a little bit older, I've been through a lot of tests in the last 5 years around, you know, CT scans or MRIs, how's my heart, how's my kidneys? And so somewhere out there are videos and tons of information about my body. But if you ask me where it is, I have no idea. I wouldn't even know where to go to look for it other than, I guess, go back to the doctor and ask for it. I think most people are like me. We go and we create these tests and these data, and then we wait for the doctor to tell us, yeah, you're fine, you're good. Luckily, I've been getting you're fine, you're good. And so I haven't even worried about the data. But if I did need it, I wouldn't even really know where it is.
And that's about it, Justin. I mean, you had all these tests done. You paid for them. You created the oil, if you want. You created the soil because your doctor used that data to come to the conclusion that you're all okay. So that's about as good as it gets, Justin, from an outcomes perspective. Maybe the one tip I would give you is you may decide to move, your doctor may decide to move, you may decide to change healthcare plan, and you don't know, in 5 years, the care team you're working with at that time might say, hey, it'd be interesting to have a look at, you know, your liver 5 years ago, last time you did an MRI or a test, that would help us assess where it's at now. If you have the data from before, that's going to help your future care team, right? So what I would ask your doctor is to maybe provide you on a memory stick or something you can take with you, the test results that he or she found were the most important ones to green light you and come to the conclusion that you're all good. And it doesn't need to be a lot more complicated than that, Justin. I mean, just taking your data with you could save healthcare costs later on, and your future healthcare team will know you better, sooner, faster, will understand how to take better care of you, you know, quicker. You know, it doesn't take more than that, you bringing your data with you. And that's kind of our message, right? We feel like healthcare should be proactively teeing patients up to play that data partner role for healthcare, which is only going to become more important as we're moving into a data-enabled personalized healthcare model, right? And your story is simple, right? One doctor and you got the green light. So I mean, that's fantastic for you, Justin. I guess we're here to share with you what this thing looks like if you don't get the green light. You know, we've experienced that and, you know, things get a lot more complicated. I like to compare it to, you know, having to learn how to create and direct an orchestra of healthcare professionals. You know, if you get some test result that shows you've got a big issue, you have to figure out which specialists you need, figure out those that you're comfortable with, your musicians, if you want. You have to figure out what your complete partition, you know, all your challenges look like. What is the data that reflects your entire challenge? And then so also you have to make sure that all those specialists you're working with are reading off the same partition, right? So in your case, Justin, it's just a matter of downloading your partition and keeping it with you so that next time you can give it to another team. If you don't get the green light, it's like building the partition, right? And building the orchestra. So our message in summary is, wouldn't it make more sense to, as we're going into a data-enabled personalized healthcare model, wouldn't it make more sense for patients to be learning, you know, how to put their partition together so that they can hand it off to healthcare to do their thing with it, rather than what patients are doing now is learning how to build an orchestra and orchestrate it. And that, you know, sounds a little theoretical, but it is, it really just comes down to, you know, allowing patients to use their data to build more effective partnerships with their healthcare. And we can bring it back to your example, Justin. I mean, you've done a lot of tests and you're all cleared. You're great. You got the green light, right? But I'm pretty sure that your doctor, you know, did also mention that there are certain things, you know, they would want to just keep an eye on, you know, things they would want to monitor in the future to make sure they don't become a bigger problem. So if you wanted to test what it would mean like for you, Justin, to use your data to build a better partnership with your healthcare, you know, here's a specific question you could ask your family doctor next time you see them. You ask that person, what data could I collate? What data could I collect that would make it easier for you to take care of me? And that's a very specifically designed question, because what that question does is it, first of all, talks about data, which doctors tend to like a lot more than talking about feelings, emotions, or family stories, right? You know, data is a lot easier. It centers the conversation on data, but it also sort of forces your physician to tell you what they worry about most for you, you know, your health concerns essentially, and how you together could keep track of that to see whether it's something really to be worried about or not. It sets it up as a partnership and not this sort of you against me, which is very, very typical. The doctor tells you what to do and you right away start thinking about how can I circumvent this, right? Because I don't like what this person's telling me. That's the very normal way. So if you ask the question that way, what data can I collect or collate for you that would make it easier for you to take care of me? That sort of changes that whole dynamic and sets you on a partnership path for it. And if you do that now, Justin, by the time, you know, some disease decides to overthrow your life, you're already going to have sort of the tools to navigate and talk to your care team. Things are going to be a lot easier for you. And I think just, Justin, I think we should let Christine, is it okay for you to share your story with
With the doctor? Yes, I was just about to. And touch on that too, as I'm part of the Stanford Human-Wide Program, which is a precision medicine initiative, really just trying to see how much of the data you should be collecting and how it comes into play. But I usually have a really good relationship with most of my physicians. And I had one recently that was very strained. We just didn't have see eye to eye in the very beginning. And my second appointment that I went in, I had talked to Christoph and we had really just talked about how to examine this situation. And when I went in to meet with him, I did ask him, I said, you know, I'm struggling. I know that you are too. I'm a heart failure patient. You know, things have been really difficult. And instead of the head butting that we had been doing the last couple of weeks, I finally said, what is it that you need from me to make my care better? And honestly, Justin, that one question right there changed the entire relationship. He just sat down and said, oh, well, if you could do this, if you could take your blood pressure at these certain times, if you can do this, and all of this data, right, that I have the potential to collect that I don't normally, right? Now I know that these are things that are going to help him. But in the meantime, they're also helping me. They're building our relationship. And we're really talking and growing together instead of that head butting, like, this is for me and you're not listening. This really, just with one simple question, shift the entire relationship that I had. So I think really that data is so important, not only to the physicians, but to us. But if you don't even ask what kind of data you should be collecting, you're not going to know anything. And so, Christoph, that was just, you know, as soon as that happened, I called him. It was like, oh my God, it's such a different relationship. And now we're helping each other. And I think that's one of the things, you know, I didn't know what data he needed. I could monitor myself whenever I wanted to, but that's not going to give him the results that he's looking for. And so now we have it standard. Okay, every morning at these times, every afternoon at these times. So it's not me monitoring on my own, it's really with that guidance and being able to know that this is the right data that I'm collecting for what we're looking for.
And it prioritizes things for you, right, Justin? You're like, you don't have to set priorities yet, but your doctor will set them for you. And you don't need to like worry about monitoring and tracking everything in your life. Your doctor will tell you these are the data points that matter most for your care specifically. Let's start with those, right?
Exactly. I just have to add, I'm sure most of us have at some point in our lives gone to a doctor with a folder full of information and the doctor is like, yeah, how are you? and it takes your pressure and your heartbeat, you know? So it's super important to sort of get the noise out, that chatter that doesn't really bloom into solutions. We should start segmenting it and building our collective intelligence. And that is what our aim is, to build empowered patients that know what is the data they really need for them to feel better, to start that collaborative way of working with doctors. Because as Christine said, it's super different when you work with doctors that work as silos versus when you work with a team. For example, I am an epileptic patient and I wanted to be a mom, and I had to sit down with my neuro doctor and my gynecologist and my nutritionist and tell them, hey guys, you have to work together because I want to have a safe, nice, healthy baby. And it shouldn't be me saying that to them, you know, but if we build that empowerment to patients, it will make a difference.
And I want to say one last thing too here is it's all about quality of life, you know, and someone's quality of life may not be the exact same as mine and what I expect. And so really that communication on where you are and what you're looking for is important to have as well. And I'll leave it there.
Yeah.
One question that I'm wrestling with myself right now, this all makes sense once you're a patient and you've got a problem and you need a solution. And I'm wondering, is ignorant bliss? Because until I have that problem, do I even want to know? Do I want to be collecting data? Do I want to find out that I have some genetic disposition and someday in the future, this may happen? Cross that bridge when I get there, because right now everything's easy, simple, not complicated. And am I just complicating my life by starting to collect data and get involved when I don't have a problem yet?
So I have a genetic condition we found out recently, passed parent to child. You know, I revealed it to my family. They don't want to know. They don't want to get tested. My mom, you know, she's in her life already. Why does she need to know? Why does she need that worry? And for me, it's really more about preparedness, right? I think we do live in this blissful oblivion, right? Of let's just go on with our normal lives. But there are certain things that you can do to really improve that quality of life. And while it may be scary to find something out that you have this, the science that we have, the technology that's available, your quality of life in the end is going to be so much better knowing these things and preparing for them. So it is, it's a scary, you know, road. It's a scary way to think about, you know, you're testing these things and you can find out all of this. But for me, I would so much rather be prepared and know what's to come than just have it hit out of the blue and me know nothing. And so I think it's really just about that proactive, you know, it is bliss to live with no problems and not think about them. But my therapist has always told me, prepare for the worst and be happy with the best, right? Even if it turns out the worst experience and I get this horrible news, I'm prepared. And I can go forward with information and data to really help me improve those outcomes, I guess you would say.
Yeah, I completely agree with what Christine is saying. For example, there are things that, yes, we live in ignorance is definitely bliss, but it's so much better. It's so much empowering to have the knowledge built around it, because there are things that, even if you are not a rare disease patient or have something that you actually know you have in your family, there are things that as a man you need to take to be aware of. And that is, for example, the risk of prostate cancer. You know, it's something that you do have to start monitoring. And men aren't used to going to a doctor versus women that as soon as we get our first menstruation, we do have to go to the gynecologist. So we already are on track on keeping track of our health. For example, with breast cancer in 2020, there were 2.3 million women diagnosed with breast cancer. And it's super important not to just keep making awareness campaigns of doing the regular checkup, but it's also super important to know that if there is somebody in your family that had breast cancer, you have to do the BRCA test. And it's a gene test that will save your life. So yes, ignorance might be bliss, But if you want to have a safe life and a nice life, because now life isn't measured in how many years you live, it's also years living with disability. So if you want to have like a nice life without those disabilities, you better get your data going.
And I want to say too, you also have the potential to mitigate some of these situations. You know, Carolina brought up breast cancer and the BRCA test, and you have previvors in that community. Those are people who actively remove the breast before the conditions happen so that they don't have to go through that. So it's not always all horrible. You know, you could end up with an easier treatment early on rather than waiting until the very last moment. You know, and I think we look at disease in that way now. We look at, we don't give you options until it's the very last ditch option. And with the technology that we have, we should be looking forward and looking at how we can mitigate a lot of these things instead of treating them after.
You know, Christine, one thought that I'm having is maybe rather than being proactive with the end in mind that I am catching a disease early, maybe it's worth being an empowered person and starting to use the power of data for improving my life and my health and my energy. And maybe it's not just about finding disease early. Maybe it's about optimizing my energy and my health and my vibrancy now. And those tools and technologies, I guess, are coming more and more into play. I'm wondering what it's going to be like. You mentioned you have a niece. What is it going to be like for her in 10 or 15 years?
Oh, gosh. You know, what I hope is very different from what I think. But what I would like is her to be strong enough and empowered enough to know that what she's dealing with is real. You know, I see a lot of the same symptoms that I dealt with as a child in my niece. I see her getting dismissed by other people and really just no one looking at that overall. You know, she's got a history here. And you know, my only hope, I think, is that she's able to use the data that she can collect to really just to get her best quality of life, to really be out there and experience life and not have to worry about someone not trusting her or her doubting her body or her feelings. You know, I think that we have the technology available to really, like I said, mitigate half of these things that are coming up. And so I would hope that the younger generation would just be a lot more empowered, a lot more mindful of themselves and what they're going through and be able to pair up together. You know, I mean, I've gotten great resources by pairing up with patients around the globe. I've given my doctors insight that they would have never had. You know, I've found conditions that other physicians failed to look for. And so what I really hope is that true empowerment for my nieces to really be able to openly discuss what they're going through, to be able to find things that work for them and to ultimately just have a good quality of life.
You know, I'm noticing already with my own children that they don't go to the doctor's office. They basically get on the phone and sometimes get on a call like this one, and they fully subscribe to virtual care.
Dr. Google is real.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering how the doctors feel about all this and how they're fitting in. I heard that when patients like you partner with them, there's a benefit both ways that happens. But what is the impact of this future look having for doctors?
For me, I think really it depends on the physician themselves and the relationship you have. You know, my doctors appreciate me and the insights that I can bring them. I don't get the normal 15-minute visit with most of my physicians. I get hours after, you know, when at the closing of their day so that we can discuss these things. But it's interesting, right? I hear from my physicians that some people are too empowered, right? They're bringing them, like Carolina said, books of information that really don't relate to them. And I honestly think we need to go back to that doctor-physician relationship and building that up and take that from the virtual to the in-person, right? Virtual care is great for certain situations and all of the technology we have is amazing, but these are only a supplement to what we're going through. And I think what we really need to do in healthcare is that, like my nonprofit, we're missing the empathy. You know, we've gotten so digital and so focused on these things that we're missing the human connection again. And so honestly, I think that's what we need. Empower patients, build these relationships, and really work together. Because it's so siloed. And we can't care for one person if we're only caring for a little part of their life.
Exactly. I would just like to add that on my previous lives, I've worked in an advertising company, and we launched a study in 2016 and recently in the pandemic that was called The Truth About Doctors. And the whole point of the study is on how to really bring that doctorness back, that when a person decides to study medicine is in a very will to really save a person's life. They don't get to medicine because they don't want to make a lot of money. You know, if you want to make a lot of money, you go and become a banker or an IT guy, or it's different. You know, when you are into medicine, you really do want to save life. And that is the doctorness, that as soon as you start your journey as a doctor, you sort of lose it because of all the noise again around the market access, all the paperwork, et cetera. And I think that digital might be a solution in a way that will allow doctors to engage more with patients and less with that paperwork. And the thing is on how to really promote that humanity back, even if it's through telemedicine. It doesn't matter how they engage, if it's physical or digital. It's the connection they bring to the patient.
And one of the things that I have learned from all of you, which makes a lot of sense to me, is that, yes, this your best health care requires a relationship with not only a doctor, but with doctors. And part of the challenges and the reason that we need to be empowered patients and people is because the system doesn't link all of those doctors together. So as soon as you have some need for a combination where you need a variety of different expertises, you as the individual need to be the one that basically integrates and pulls all of that picture together and make that available to all of those doctors, because they're probably not going to have the time or ability to pull it together amongst them.
Yeah, exactly. For example, my grandfather was a doctor and he was a family doctor. You know, he went to a house and he came to visit the whole house, even if they have a cat or a dog, you know. And he knew the big picture. But now we do go to specialists, which is fine, but we need somebody, and maybe it's not us. We do need somebody that integrates that picture. And maybe the role could be of functional medicine or a family doctor or whatever, but we do need a physician that understands how the dots should be connected correctly. That is my humble opinion.
And I want to touch really quick on that. Especially when you start to have multiple conditions. When you have one, it's fairly easy to get your care. When you start to have more comorbidities as you go on, it gets more and more difficult. And, you know, we have an overwhelming amount of data, but it also is how we use that data. You know, I have I don't even know how many specials. We're at over 20 now, but each of those, they don't talk together. They don't share the same data unless I'm pointing it out. You know, when I was a kid, I used to have a doctor that met with other doctors around a table and discussed the difficult situations and really looked at things holistically. And I think we've gotten so siloed that we only care for the one issue at hand. We solve what's most important and then we move on. And we're not looking at that. And that collective data, I have so much information that could be used between my physicians. So really, you know, like Christoph said, this is an orchestra. And and trying to conduct this orchestra when you have a really easy song is great and fine. But when you start to get into Mozart and Beethoven, it becomes a little more difficult. So, you know, all of that data is great, but really also knowing how to utilize it. And again, going back to that holistic approach, working with multiple different doctors, and really trying to build those relationships. But Christoph, any thoughts on that whole thing? Because that is your analogy of the orchestra. And
you know, as a caregiver, if I look back 10 years, it, to me, it feels like half of the energy spent was on getting healthcare, right? It wasn't on getting better. It was the burden of getting healthcare, right? That's what it feels like to me, right? Now, look, I mean, this is not a new problem. This is an old problem. Patients have been saying this forever, right? I mean, forever, and it's kind of a problem, thanks to the beautiful complexity that healthcare has become because of all these specialists, right? You know, which is great. You know, you don't want to have one doctor that does it all, right? You know, you want to, you know, it's good news that we have all these specialists. But to me, indeed, I think for healthcare to move into the next league, if you want, is that data helps patients connect much more easily with exactly the right care for them, that they don't have to orchestrate this anymore. And digital platforms, value-based healthcare, that those are all the things that are trying to achieve that, right? So that's sort of the next step up for healthcare. But definitely already today, Justin, you can use your data and prioritize it by all means, but you can use your data to already make your care teams, understand your song much better. It's definitely already possible today.
And you can't argue with data.
That's
as
true.
Long as it's corrected, collected in the right way.
There you go. Christoph, you and I have a long journey in big pharma. What is it that the pharma executives and leaders need to pay attention to when it comes to this story we're talking about, the data-empowered person or patient?
Well, we focus on data training for patients because we believe that the full potential of personalized healthcare is not going to be achieved unless patients know how to play their part, how to add their piece of the puzzle. And so my one message would be, you know, there's so much more engagement going on with patients and pharma nowadays that my one message would be, every time you engage a patient, and it doesn't really matter whether it's in your trial or with initiatives on your marketed products, every time your company engages a patient, those patients should be walking away with increased capabilities and understanding on how they can use your data to partner more effectively with their care team and, you know, ensuring that their care is personalized as much as possible. And the more companies that, you know, include this as part of their engagements, the sooner we'll be having patient communities around the world that can do their part, add their piece of the puzzle needed to enable personalized healthcare that we all want. And we feel it's an exciting time to be, you know, involved in this because pharma clearly is engaging, you know, patients even more than before, and including in R&D, right? So between R&D wanting to look more into building remote relationships with patients, and, you know, in general, pharma increasingly more taking an ecosystem partnership approach rather than what I would call a pharma silo approach, That's, you know, those are the trends that our thinking fits into, right? So the more we'll see of that, the more I hope we'll be able to impact engagements that are happening.
So I'm asking patients to come and be part of my functional expertise, which, if I hear you right, is the wrong way around. I need to basically be going to the patient's view of the whole ecosystem. They don't actually care about all those different functional expertises. They care about their disease or their healthcare need.
Do I have a chance to share a short story with you on this topic? And my advice for our industry is really that, you know, we talk about the silos. We have people who work in clinical trials. We have people working in consent. We have the patient journey. We have all of these different parts. And each one of those parts is your job. But for me as a patient, each one of those parts is a piece of my day. And so when we look at this in as an approach from your own industry standpoint, you know, say we're talking about clinical trials and we're trying to talk to clinical trials with people who don't even have a basic understanding of how to have a relationship with their physician. You know, I think those are the things that we're missing. And I had spoken at a conference years ago and they were talking about collaborative, you know, resources, getting together, bringing rare drugs to market faster. And they asked in that session, how many of you would be willing to work together to bring these drugs to market faster? No one raised their hand. I stood up and basically told them, I'm not one of you. I may look like you, but I'm here as a patient. And to me, sitting in this room, listening to you talk about how there could be potential solutions to what some of these disease conditions are going through, but then to hear that none of you are willing to work together was completely devastating to me. And so I sat and I said, you're going to go home today. You're going to kiss your husband, your wife. You're going to play with your kids. You're going to have your dinner. You're going to plan your trip to Hawaii. And I'm going home to decide if I should pay for this medication or ask my parents for money, or just forego it altogether. And if you're not working together, I'm kind of screwed.
That's really it. I mean, my advice to pharma people is, you know, be careful with spending a lot of energy on understanding and managing your internal silos, because that's energy you won't have anymore to understand the external silos you need to tackle if you really want to be patient-centric.
Makes perfect sense. You know, one of the things that I've been reflecting on from one of our other conversations that's holding true today is you mentioning, Christine, that one of your challenges is that you don't look like a patient, what we would think of as a patient. And the same holds true for you, Carolina, is that you don't look like patients. And one of the realizations that I'm having as I'm getting older as well, is there's probably a lot more patients in our everyday life than what we ever imagined, because somehow with modern medicine, with the healthcare that we do have, we carry on pretty productive and so-called normal lives and don't even realize that the patients are actually
around us,
all around us.
Yeah. When I got my first seizure and I started, I'm a super open person. I tell everyone about my stuff, you know, but as soon as I told people that I had epilepsy, all of the sudden, a lot of people around me started telling them their experiences, if it's a friend, if it's a family member, etc., because patients, they're everywhere. All of us are a patient. Even if you're a man, you have to be checking your prostate. I mean, we should be engaged with our, not only our wellness, but our health issues, preventive or corrective.
You know, we touched on the technology and everything that we have available, and I shouldn't be here. you know, I've had my last rites read to me 6 times. I've had joint replacements. I'm being powered by a battery with my pacemaker defibrillator, right? I should not be alive. So we are keeping people alive in a way where we shouldn't. You know, we didn't plan for this when they established Social Security, which I'm living off of, right? That wasn't intended to keep someone alive for the rest of their life. It was intended to keep you comfortable until you passed. And so now with this technology and keeping people alive, we have to now consider that we have these living people, right, who are put together with mismatched parts and batteries that are keeping them alive. And we still look the same. You know, but what we're dealing with is a lot more difficult than anybody can see.
Yeah. And one of our guests in our Health Reconsidered room had a very interesting quote that was that digital amplifies our serendipity. And with all these digital conversations around patients, it has really amplified that serendipity feeling of, wow, so we've been living this before or connecting with others. So,
well, you carry it with such grace. Thank you so much for sharing it with all of our listeners.
It has been great seeing you, singing for you, talking to you.
Christoph, any closing remarks that you think everyone else should know? We've had some amazing conversations and, you know, we can't possibly pull in the hundreds of hours that we've all discussed, but what is your take?
It really, you know, touches me deeply inside, right? Because I'm a caregiver, right? And you know, I cannot be more genuine when I say that there's nothing really in my life that inspires me more and humbles me more than, you know, the strength, confidence, and grit that patients show when they're on the edge. It's really like a different league of inspiration you get from feeling and witnessing this, way beyond any professional topics or, you know, conversations. And it's also, Justin, going back to your Live With Intent approach to things, it's really also why I'm doing this and why I love working with people like Carolina and Christine, because, you know, I think that's what, frankly, is more important to me in this world or in this life than anything else, really, that there isn't much else going on that I think comes even close to being as important as this, is trying to make, you know, life easier for patients. And a big part of that is really their interface with healthcare. That's why I'm in this space and why I find it really hard to imagine that something else is going to convince me to focus on it more for the rest of my life, right?
Well, you're reminding me of one of my favorite quotes, which is something like, everyone you meet is facing a battle you know nothing about, so be kind always. And I think the feeling that I experience in talking to all of you these two different times is a deeper sense of love for people. So thank you for bringing that into my life.
Thank you for letting us be a part of your life. That's even more important.
Yeah, and Justin, I think, you know, kudos to you as well. You set this conversation up for us to be able to just be this open and transparent with you. And you ask fantastic questions. So, you know, you're really good at what you do as well, Justin. So thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Carolina?
I am just happy to have had my coffee with you guys. It's so fascinating to have these spaces with people all over the world and see how there's this energy towards really bringing humanity to medicine, humanity to that patient centricity that has been all over the place for so long, but it sometimes lacks this humanity. And it's interesting to see what products or services will come out of it to really deliver our promise.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, okay. Justin. Thank
you. Have a great day.
Now let's turn to Justin and Christoph for a brief reflection on this conversation.
Christoph, what is it that you appreciate most about all of these patients you've been working with, Christine, Carolina, and beyond?
It doesn't seem to matter where they are. They're focused on what really matters, almost regardless of all the stuff around it. They're laser focused on just what really matters and putting up with all the stuff around it is what I find amazing. Their humbleness, they're so in tune with what really matters for patients that, you know, all you have to do is listen and follow their lead. That's what really impresses me so much.
They have a deep purpose-driven life. There's an intensity and a vibrancy of, if somebody that is pursuing a purpose with full intent, with full intensity, and that is very inspiring. And I like how you articulate it often, going through life with a handbrake on, or, you know, multiple handbrakes on, and they keep going. It's truly inspiring and incredible.
Beyond anything else in my life, Justin, really, beyond anything else in my life. And imagine then being in conversations where you see an opportunity at scale to make life easier, typically by facilitating the ecosystem for patients in their day-to-day life, right? You know, those are like inspiring. I mean, that gives you energy beyond anything else. You know, that's how I perceive it.
Well, thank you on behalf of both Thomas and myself for co-hosting these couple of episodes and for introducing us to Christina and now Carolina. Thank you so much.
Justin, thanks for making this podcast possible and thanks for everything you're doing, you know, in your life as well.
Thank you. To all of our listeners, thank you for listening. Our desire is to explore and contribute to the future of healthcare by applying the principles of Live with Intent.
For more information on the future of healthcare Live with Intent podcast, go to www.livewithintent.eu. This podcast is produced by Madeline May.